So before we turn to the campaign part of Campaign 2012, we've just had several days of nuclear talks with Iran that have kind of just wrapped up. And I'm wondering, so let's start by bringing us up to speed on the state of play of the actual policy issue. What have these talks yielded, and where are we now?
Well, we just concluded the third round of talks between Tehran and the six world powers, which have become known as the P5, the permanent five members of the UN Security Council, plus one, the one being Germany. This third set of talks produced really no positive momentum forward, and that, I think, is a considerable disappointment to all involved, particularly because the first round, only 2 months ago, started off with a sense of some optimism. This was the first revival of the diplomatic process on Iran in about 18 months, and the initial set of talks appeared to be going reasonably well, at least in the relative context of the dialogue that has taken place over the course of the past decade on Iran's nuclear program. There has been a sense that the diplomatic process is foundering. There is no expectation that even a sort of modest confidence-building measure is going to be achievable in the near term. I think there's a sense of a crisis of strategy about where to go next with Iran that I expect will get a lot of attention over the course of the upcoming campaign.
So let's talk about how this issue plays in the campaign. It's not the front burner issue in the sense that it's not the U.S. economy. On the other hand, it is probably the leading foreign policy issue that the candidates end up talking about.
Iran has a tendency to pop back into the headlines, particularly during election years, and we've seen that happen over the course of the primary campaign as Republican candidates discussed foreign policy. Iran tended to be a fairly sizable element of that discussion. And that, of course, factored into the overall sort of strategic context of decision making here in Washington and the U.S.-Iranian relationship or lack thereof. So we've already seen some sort of an impact in the sense that Republican candidates have been quite critical of President Obama. This was not simply the standard bearer and now nominee of the Republican Party, Mitt Romney, but many of his rivals who have articulated, I think, a fairly coherent criticism of the president and of the administration for not forestalling Iran's nuclear progress over the course of the past 3.5 years. Their critique tends to be grounded in a discomfort with what the president himself campaigned upon 4 years ago, which was this policy of engaging with adversaries, of dialogue as a means to resolve even some of the world's most difficult problems. He got very little in with respect to dialogue from Iran. Of course, this process was interrupted by political changes within Iran, dramatic upheaval across the course of the region. But it has been difficult to make the case that diplomacy has, in fact, yielded a clear path forward on forestalling Iran's capacity to cross the nuclear threshold. What the president has offered in terms of rebuttal has been, I think, to point to his record of amassing an incredible coalition of countries around the most severe economic sanctions in history as applied to Iran. It is expected that when the full implementation of the sanctions on the Iranian Central Bank and the full implementation of the EU embargo of crude oil imports to Iran, from Iran, which will go into implementation in early July, that Iran may lose as much as 60% of its daily oil exports. This will cost the regime a considerable amount. And it is factoring into, I think, the overall climate for negotiations. At this point, the Republicans have made a case over the course of the past few months, and I expect it again to come into play in the general election, that there is a need for the use of force with respect to Iran, that negotiations aren't sufficient to deal with an adversary, which is this unwilling to yield, which is as committed as Iran has proven to be on its nuclear program. The president has something of a dilemma on his hands because he is, of course, committed to diplomacy, but he needs to avoid the perception and mitigate it against attacks from Republicans that he is, in fact, just engaging in a process for the sake of process, talks for the sake of talks.
So let's break this down. Let's start with, you know, the president's actual record over the last few years, because I think there's been, you say in your paper that the debate over Iran has tended to generate more heat than light. I'd like to sort of focus in on you know, the hand that Obama was dealt with respect to Iran and what cards he has played and what cards he still has to play. So what's he done? How has it worked?
He has a reasonable track record to run on, which is to say that the level of pain that Iran is now suffering as compared to what the status was in 2008 is incredibly dramatically increased. Iran is now subject to a variety of sanctions at the United Nations level, at the US federal level, and sanctions that have been imposed by a number of other countries around the world. Much of that has come in the wake of Obama administration efforts to commit to diplomacy. And this is what the president and the administration are pointing to as the fruits of their investment in diplomacy, that the willingness to reach out a hand, to extend a willingness to talk to the Iranian regime has in fact generated a kind of international coalition that was non-existent during the time of the Bush administration, which took a much more assertive approach to Iran, at least rhetorically. And so in this respect, the president has something to show for his diplomatic investment. Unfortunately, the diplomacy has not produced any real progress toward an agreement. There have been moments of some optimism, moments including the spring, moments including the fall of 2009, both periods in which Iran appeared to be moving toward at least some small concessions that would not have ended the concerns about its ongoing enrichment of uranium, but might have dealt with some of the most urgent elements of the program and effectively bought a little bit more time for the international community to work further, to apply more pressure, and to offer new incentives that might in fact persuade Tehran to abandon its quest toward a full capacity of the nuclear fuel cycle. Those moments have not in fact come through for the president. In both cases, both of these apparent periods of progress have foundered because ultimately the Iranians have a tremendous distrust for the U.S. in particular, for the international community writ large. And they are determined to continue with this program unless and until they receive some level of what they perceive as some kind of compensation for whatever concessions they may make. And so the administration has effectively only exacerbated the dilemma that the United States faces. Because of the severity of the sanctions, the Iranians are more willing to come to the table and talk. But in effect, they're demanding a higher price for any real concessions right now. And the administration in an election year is unwilling to pay that price.
So the administration, the sanctions are clearly effective in hurting Iran and in injecting pain and injury. Is there any evidence that they are having effect in terms of generating pressure or responsiveness on the part of the regime, other than showing up for talks?
I think this is, a considerable ambiguity. Certainly when you speak to U.S. officials, they appear quite confident that the Iranians are well aware of the urgency of their economic predicament. Not simply have they lost considerable degree of their exports, they've been forced to go to barter trade as much of their economy has been cut off from the international financial system. Their currency crashed and lost about half its value even before these sanctions have been fully implemented. And that's had an impact on the day-to-day lives of tens of millions of Iranians because of the impact on the prices that they pay for all the basic goods that they need. So there is a sense that the Iranians are well aware that this cannot go on forever. They cannot survive this level of financial pressure, and therefore that sense of urgency brought them to the table. And in fact, did more than that, brought them to the table in a way that appeared to be constructive, in a way in which they were actually engaging on the issues, and there was this sense that there was progress to be made. The difficulty is that from the Iranian perspective, there is a tendency, because they have lived with sanctions of some form or another for the past 33 years, there tends to be a sense of inflated optimism, perhaps even denial about the potential severity of the economic pressure that they faced. You know, this is a country that has endured war, revolution, a lot of chaos and disruption, and in fact, the regime has survived. And they are counting on the fact that you know, at a moment, a key moment for an American president facing re-election, at a key moment for the global economic recovery and for Europe in particular, that there is going to be some degree of prudence about precisely how these sanctions will be applied. And so they are counting on the necessity of Iran's oil to the global economy to, in fact, mitigate some of the economic pain that, that they will feel. It's a bit of a game of chicken on both sides. The U.S. in particular would like to see the maximal leverage from these sanctions, and therefore is, you know, understandably unwilling to show any flexibility, particularly on the eve of their full implementation. The Iranians are hoping to get as much as they possibly can and give as little as possible.
So the Republicans, from a Republican point of view, Iran is a juicy target to pin on the administration because it's an area where the administration talked a big game coming in about engaging with our enemies and has yet to produce the very thing that the Bush administration had itself failed to produce. And presumably along the way, the nuclear program has advanced somewhat and will eventually reach this point of, I guess, critical mass. And, you know, to what extent does the Republican critique have merit?
I think there is real merit in the Republican critique. This is a strategy that has a certain logic to it, which has not, in fact, proven to be the case, in fact. You know, this idea that through a combination of pressure and incentives, we can persuade the Iranians to bargain away a capability that their leadership has invested heavily in over the course of more than two decades, that their leadership clearly views as integral to their own defense, and views quite increasingly as an important dimension of the sort of sovereign legitimacy of the regime itself. It's difficult to put a price tag on something like this. And so even if we're a regime that may be capable of making a sort of rational cost-benefit assessment of its interests, there is a rational argument for continuing to proceed with this program. And more to the point, the Iranians perceive the nuclear issue as a pretext. They are wholly convinced that this is really only the first of a sort of unending list of grievances that the international community and that Washington in particular wishes to press with them, and that the pressure that is currently in place will exist until the regime itself has been removed. They see sanctions as part of a strategy of soft war to begin to empower an opposition and weaken the authority of the regime. And so even as we try to sort of create a negotiating process, the very mechanisms that we're using to incentivize the Iranians to negotiate tend to erode their confidence in any prospects of negotiations. And it makes the entire logic of this sanctions-based approach, I think, more problematic. The difficulty, of course, from the Republican side is that they don't really have a better alternative. The only alternatives on offer tend to be threats or actual pledges to use military action against the Iranian regime. And it's, you know, exceptionally unclear as to whether or not a strike would actually advance American interests. There's a debate among strategists about how long an Iranian nuclear program would be set back by either an American or an Israeli strike. The conventional estimates seem to be around 3 to 5 years at the very most optimistic end of the spectrum. And in response to a strike, the Iranians can be expected to create havoc across the region. It would have a dramatic impact on a number of American interests in security and stability in the Persian Gulf, the prospects of any revival of an Arab-Israeli peace process, the democratic transitions that are already experiencing rocky moments in Egypt and elsewhere across the Arab Spring countries, and of course on the global economy and the price of oil. So the Republican response, the Republican alternative, is not one that offers a more persuasive promise of success.
So where does that leave the next administration, whether it's a second term of the Obama administration or a Romney administration? You have a set of tools that have been tried, have not shrouded themselves in glory, and you have a, no pun intended, nuclear option that involves costs we don't want to pay and questionable benefits. What's the right strategy for the next administration?
The right strategy is a recognition of what's achievable. We have been successful in deterring Iran's progress. We have not, of course, ended the nuclear program, but through a variety of mechanisms, sanctions, covert actions, including what we now know about some of the internet viruses that were used to incapacitate parts of Iran's nuclear program, and other means have been able to keep Iran from crossing whatever it is we determine to be the red line of nuclear capability. We can continue to use these means effectively. And in an environment of the level of economic pain that Iran is currently suffering, there will be some degree of political change within the country. It won't happen, you know, prior to an American election. It probably won't happen while we hold open the prospect of nuclear negotiations over the course of the next few months. But there will be some rational decision making which recognizes that ultimately this regime cannot survive without some source of external income, and that in Iran under this degree of economic difficulty can easily be confronted by, you know, the largest and most powerful military in the history of the world. This is, you know, we have the means to contain Iranian influence. We've been doing it successfully over the course of the past 33 years. U.S. officials have talked incessantly since the Islamic Revolution about Iran's aspirations for regional hegemony. But that tells you something. Iran has never achieved anything like regional hegemony. And in the current set of circumstances, with Arab publics empowered, with Gulf states highly attuned to the threat and the possibility of Iran's efforts to spread its influence, there's really very little likelihood that Iran is going to be successful in achieving a greater hold on communities across the Middle East.
So you don't see realistically, despite the role that the issue plays in the campaign, you don't see realistically a major shift in policy depending on which side wins the election?
I don't see any prospect of a breakthrough through negotiations, at least under the current leadership in Iran. And I don't see any prospect that this administration, or frankly, in all likelihood, a Romney administration, would be willing to risk the sort of economic and strategic chaos that would ensue from a military strike on Iran's nuclear facilities. You know, this we've seen the legacy of two wars in the Middle East, and I think it's highly unlikely that any administration that comes into office at a time when most Americans are fundamentally concerned about job creation and about the economic future of the country is going to risk another one which would likely to be uglier and bloodier.
And does that mean, as a practical matter, that we will tolerate, with a lot of economic sanctions and a lot of efforts to drive the Iranian economy into the ground, we will tolerate a nuclear Iran if we have to?
This administration and every other major political figure in the United States has said that we will not, and that containment in particular is not on the table. But the reality is that Iran has progressed further than either the Bush administration or the Obama administration wished that it would do so. Iran has enrichment, even though the Bush administration insisted that that could not be the case. We are now at a point where Iran has these capabilities. It is probably not possible to roll those capabilities back, and we have found a way to live with them. It has not tipped the strategic balance in the region in Iran's favor. I believe that we can continue to slow and deter and undermine the Iranian nuclear program. I believe that our deterrent capabilities are far in excess of what we need to deal with in Iran, even with greater capabilities than it has today.
And so what you're saying, if I understand you, is that despite the prominence of the issue in the campaign, there is a kind of an ineluctable quality to the way the issue plays out in policy that's rather independent of American domestic politics.
I think you're exactly right. I mean, Iran is just a hot button issue in American politics. It's something that average Americans on the street have a bit of salience for it. It resonates in a way that, perhaps Pakistan or North Korea do not.
Is that because of the hostage crisis? Why is that? I mean, North Korea actually has nuclear weapons, and it's not really a part of our daily campaign debate. Why do we have such a fascination with Iranian politics in our domestic electoral politics?
It's an interesting question. I think, certainly for my generation, it is a legacy of the hostage crisis. It is also a fact that Iran was the first country in the Middle East to experience a kind of religious and mass-oriented revolution, and that really changed the nature of the U.S. strategic position in the Middle East. Of course, the role of Ahmadinejad, probably the only Middle Eastern leader in recent history who's been caricatured on Saturday Night Live on a regular basis, has had some degree of value in communicating to the average American that this is a country run by a fairly radical group of individuals. I think it is just a persistent issue. It has been a persistent issue for American presidents, but there is a certain degree of consistency in the way that all American presidents, from Jimmy Carter to Ronald Reagan, both President Bush as President Clinton and now President Obama, have all used some degree of threat, have all used some degree of coercion, but also have all used some degree of engagement and diplomacy in their policies. And I expect that whomever takes office next January will do the same.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.